So this is a class focusing on the addictive personality. It's still Kundalini Yoga, but it's Kundalini Yoga with a particular focus on this aspect of ourselves that not all of us. In fact, I have a friend who says that 99% of the world is addicted. 99.999% of the world is addicted, but only 0.0001% actually acknowledge it. So welcome to the very few. Actually, I had an interesting conversation with somebody this morning about just that. And we talked about it on the weekend. We're so encouraged to be completely off our heads, whether it's on sugar or wheat or anger or intensity. The whole world is completely and utterly guides us towards being totally spaced out. Hello, welcome. Hello, welcome. I'll give the. Do you have a mat? Yes, great. If you find yourself a little petal. Maybe those of you who are being petaled right now could just move over a little way. Great. Thank you. Hello. There'll come a point where maybe next week we have to give up on being petals and become vertical stripes. You can cope with that, I think. Hi, thank you. You can come here. I promise to be careful with you.
Thank you.
Ah. I can move this over here. So I was just kind of going through the introduction. I need to know, those of you who have just arrived, have you done Kundalini Yoga before? You have? Have you? You have, yes. Have you?
Long time ago.
Long time ago. Okay. Have you done Kundalini Yoga before?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, so nobody is a novice to Kundalini Yoga. You've done it before?
Once.
If I talk about Breath of Fire, are you familiar and comfortable with that? Okay, Breath of Fire. It's an interesting technique to master. Breath of Fire is a powerful breath, a fantastic breath. So we're focusing on the addictive personality. I come back to the original introduction. And Breath of Fire, I'm very interested in recognizing that as addicts we have issues and that we have tools. And my purpose in teaching this class is to help you come to terms with the issues, but to recognize that you have tools. And so yoga is an exquisite tool for the addictive personality. I did a workshop on Sunday, and I may refer back to that, and it's just how my mind went in terms of what we talked about. We covered an enormous amount. But there are certain tools, and one of them is Breath of Fire. Breath of Fire is amazing if you're trying to stop acting out. Breath of Fire is it's a breath that affects the nervous system. It engages 72,000 nerve endings. And I'm actually going to talk about depression today. We're going to focus the class on the subject of depression. Now, I'm very happy to own having been suicidally depressed twice in my life. And the second time was about 4.5 years ago. And it finished 4.5 years ago. And it's very much a part of the addictive personality. It's unexpressed anger. I'm going to deal with anger in a separate class. But this class today is dealing very much with the hormonal flow to do with depression. So can any of you link into that in any way? Yeah, exactly. So a lot of us mostly we use to escape ourselves. And the problem with depression is it puts us right in front of ourselves, and it's very, very terrifying. More than anything, one of the main presenting issues with depression is how terrifying it is, because it forces us to look at ourselves, and to look at ourselves is really frightening. So it puts us in this very strange oxymoron about how we feel. Does that make sense of the experience? So I'm going to talk about it whilst I teach and give you an introduction as well. But initially, when I come upon a tool, I will go sideways into a tool. And Breath of Fire is very, very much a tool, and it's worth mastering. Again, as I've said before, I have a channel on YouTube with a lot of films. It's got 120 films on it. Not all of them to do with yoga, but there are a lot of explanations of things like Breath of Fire. So I'll take you through it now, but I think if you want to master Breath of Fire, it's one of the most potent tools you have to completely transform how you feel. And if you're going to act out on anything, whether it's intensity, anger, drug addiction, pornography, it doesn't matter what it is you act out on. You need things that can change how you feel and can stop you. And Breath of Fire is one of those things. So Breath of Fire engages the navel here, 72,000 nerve endings. When you start to master Breath of Fire, you start to strengthen your nervous system. So this is one aspect about it that's fantastic, is initially you may find that it's very difficult. And if you have used a lot of drugs, if you've used a lot of intensity, if you've used a lot of alcohol, and if you've had a lot of issues with food, you'll have seriously trashed your nervous system. And what's fascinating about Kundalini Yoga, against all other yogas, is it very much focuses on building the nervous system. So Breath of Fire is one of the first steps in starting to consciously restore the nervous system. And where Breath of Fire becomes very interesting in terms of depression is everything closing in, yet we're terrified to look at what we're closing in on. So it's a bit like being trapped in a box with a very large spider, unless you have a love affair with spiders, which personally I don't. So it's an incredibly uncomfortable experience. What Breath of Fire does is it strengthens the nervous system. It activates the third chakra. The third chakra is A, your creativity, B, your self-esteem, and C, your ability to project. It's your ability to put yourself out there. And I don't mean that you leave your body at all, but if you have an idea of something that you want to create, then mastering the third chakra through Breath of Fire, leg raises, sit-ups, that kind of thing, allows you to manifest. Does that make sense? So Breath of Fire is potent, particularly in dealing with depression, because 3 minutes of Breath of Fire will change all the chemistry of your blood. It will raise the oxygen levels in your blood by 90 times. And if you combine a posture with Breath of Fire, then that posture is empowered by 10 times. Are you with me? So how do you practice Breath of Fire? Breath of Fire, it can be done in two ways. If you want to cool down, you pant. So, and when you do it like this, which is quite rare to do it panting, its job is to cool down the liver. So it's against anger, because the liver is the seat of anger in the body. When you do Breath of Fire with the mouth closed, the job of Breath of Fire is to heat you up, to stoke the fires of who you are as an individual, to stoke your energy, the power, your belief in yourself. It builds you phenomenally. So how you do Breath of Fire to make it work is that the inhale and the exhale need to be the same length. So you don't do a series of exhales until you've run out of breath. You inhale as much as you exhale. So if you sit straight, Breath of Fire looks and sounds like, and on a regular speed, you can see you're doing it very well, and your t-shirt lets that be seen. So as she breathes out, her belly goes in, because what you're doing is you're not breathing from up here. So Breath of Fire is not, that's not Breath of Fire, that's just hyperventilating. It's not the same thing at all. Breath of Fire is when you consciously overtake the automatic nervous system. You breathe without thinking, which is our entire drama in our life, is that we breathe without thinking. When you do Breath of Fire, it's a form of pranayama, and what you do is you sublimate the automatic nervous system and you take over. And you do that by forcing the diaphragm up, and that empties the lungs. And then when you release the diaphragm, it drags air back into the lungs. So to force the diaphragm up, the best way to do that is to imagine you have a bug in your nose. Excellent. Now, your next reality is that if you're not familiar with this, or you're recovering your trashed nervous system, you'll lose the rhythm. It's perfectly normal. It takes time to build the nervous system. So the trick is, slow down. It's not advised to go any faster than that. Any faster than that really is hyperventilating. You don't need to go faster than that. You get into classes with people where they're really flapping, and it doesn't make any difference. You don't need to go any faster. A regular rhythm like the one we just did is fine. When you lose the rhythm, slow down. Okay? That's Breath of Fire. The locks. I need you to understand the locks, because the locks are a tool, the body locks. You have three body locks. What the body locks do is allow you to gird your energy in your body. So the body locks now, I'm telling you because they link in with depression very, very much. The body locks are three areas of the body that you contain very tightly at the end of a posture. And the first lock, the root lock, engages the eight muscles of the base of your pelvis. And it is very, very good for grounding your soul in your body. So if we're feeling depressed, we're disconnected from everything, yes? We have no sense of self. Root lock strengthens the base. It holds your soul in your body. So it gives the energy in the body somewhere to root. So if you imagine that your spinal column is like a tree, and actually what you want is this tree to be perfectly rising up to the thousand-petaled lotus, strong and tall, the root lock, then followed by the other locks, it strengthens and girds the spine and enables you to raise this energy up. So the locks are very important. When you pull three locks, you can only pull three locks if you're sitting straight. So if you're leaning forward or over on one side or arching your back, you don't pull anything except the root lock. And your teacher will never ask you, should never ask you to pull anything except the root lock. When you're sitting really straight, then you can pull all three locks. So the root lock, just take a long deep breath. Pull your anus, your sexual organs, pull in your belly. That's your root lock. You notice quite quickly there's a feeling of energy coming up. And exhale. The navel, the belly lock, happens under, that's the base of my ribs is here. And you tighten here. It doesn't tighten, that part tightens with the root lock. The belly lock happens here. It's a part of the body called the hara, which is said to be the center of our body. So when you tighten the belly lock, you tighten the root lock first and then the belly lock here. You don't do the belly lock without the root lock, okay? And when you do the neck lock, you want to engage these ligaments. Can you see here? You pull the neck back. So what you do when you do the neck lock is that the entire spine becomes completely straight. So now inhale. Squeeze the energy, squeeze the anus, the sexual organs, pull the belly, tighten under the ribs, pull the neck back. And you can feel that your spine is girded. Your spine feels like it's got steel rods either side of it. Watch the energy rising, stay inside. And exhale. Did you feel that blast of heat? Or even if it's not a blast of heat, can you feel that wave of energy coming up? That's the job of the body lock. So when I say pull the root lock, it's just the first base. If I say pull all the locks, that's what I need you to do. So coming back to depression and the addictive personality, if you get into any sort of recovery, I mean, recovery means putting something down, putting an acting out behavior down. If you are in 12-step recovery, and if you were in AA or NA, it would mean that you don't drink and you don't take drugs. But actually, in a broader sense, the moment that you decide to stop something, to give something up, or you even want to examine it, you start to get in touch with yourself in a deeper sense. And that opening that door to examining and to considering it lays you open to starting to discover a lot more. And the key issues with recovery are fear, anger, depression, low self-esteem. They're kind of like the first layer of what you touch in recovery. And depression can be one of the most frightening aspects. And where yoga is quite interesting is that you can learn very much through your posture, and we'll focus on this today, you can learn to re-engage a lot of hormonal flow if you understand how the postures work. So depression, the various aspects of depression are, first of all, that it can be life-threatening, as we may have known to our cost, or certainly to other people's costs. This is one aspect. And it can be a very, very debilitating and very serious condition. It can also be a very manipulative thing, whereby we control other people around us very much. And sometimes it's very interesting to look at actually how invested we are in what's going on. And that doesn't mean I don't dismiss the power of depression. I don't. But not all depression is life-threatening. Some of it is a way of controlling other people. And I have experience of that, both from my own experience and from my own family experience, that it's a way of manipulating people. And it's really worth looking at that. The experience of depression can be vastly enhanced by how we eat and how we don't take care of ourselves. So by contrast, how we take care of ourselves, we can profoundly change the experience of depression into something that is very transformative. And the most, some of the most potent postures to affect depression we'll go through today, and I'll explain them to you. So if you are somebody who touches depression, there are certain things that if somebody came to see me with depression that I would absolutely always do. And we'll start with those today as the warm-up, which is now decided what I'm going to teach. So your main thing is that if you use addictively, you trash your hormonal flow. And mostly what you trash is serotonin and dopamine and endorphins. Do you know about any of these hormones? Serotonin and dopamine are released by the pituitary gland. And they're the hormones that make us feel good. And they're the hormones that are most trashed by drug and alcohol abuse and food and intensity. And then endorphins are the body's own internal morphine. Yes.
What do you mean by intensity?
That's an interesting question. Drama. Stress. Getting really intense about things. Getting really worked up. Getting really hooked on something that somebody's done. You know, where you create dramas and you knit and you tighten up and you pull other people in and you somehow always have something going on. So you may have put down sex but picked up intensity. Because this is something, again, that came up the other day, is that there's very interesting things that are linked. If you have an eating disorder, you may find that you don't have sex. And then when you find you have sex again, you don't eat. You don't have the same issues. They swing, yes? You can have an eating disorder and no sex. You find sex again and the eating disorder diminishes. You can have anger issues and smoke. So stop smoking. Smoke and you're not angry. Put the smoking down and you're absolutely furious, yes? And they tend to, there's a kind of seesawing effect that happens. One tends to bring up the other. So you put down one thing and intensity can come up a lot with stopping drinking or taking drugs. A lot. And it's a natural thing, the anger, the drama. We look for hormonal rush because our hormones are so out of balance. So how we work with yoga can really restore the balance. So I think rather than me keep talking now, have you got questions with anything I've said so far? Are you all okay? Are you all with me? Yeah?
Self-harm come into that as well, Karen.
Sorry?
Self-harm, did that come into that as well?
Self-harm is an extraordinary, yeah, self-harm definitely is a fantastically intense experience, not only for you, but for anyone else that knows about it, because you're very controlling. Self-harm is quite a fascinating thing, because it's about trying to recognize that you exist through the pain and the shock of the blood, yes? Not only blood, there's also hurting yourself with your head and stuff. But the effect it has on everyone around you is very much intensity. So quite often how we behave brings up a lot of intensity and we create a lot of drama. We get very addicted to, you know, as the addictive personality manifests itself, is in creating drama around us, in whatever form it takes, and that is definitely one way of doing it. Any other questions before we start? You look worried. Are you okay?
No. No, I just curly now. I'm not sure about when you mentioned sex. What it has to do with intensity and, for example, replacing food with sex. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I couldn't understand. I don't understand.
There are five main addictions, and they are drugs, in no particular order. Drugs, alcohol, gambling, sex, and food. They're the five main ones, and they're considered the main ones because they're considered to be killer addictions.
Okay.
The sex is an interesting one because it's a very huge topic, and it ranges from sexual anorexia, which usually meets its opposite in food, binging and purging and overeating.
Mm-hmm.
But it can also go through into, it can be for women as well as for men. But it can be very much about pornography, it can be about intense relationships, it can be about compulsive masturbation. It can go off in many, many forms, just as drug addiction can go off into heroin, and marijuana, and sex addiction has the same kind of weaving net of different things that can happen. And there are different aspects to it for men and for women, and then you've got HIV, you've got rape, you've got, you know, all the other sort of much more negative aspects to it.
But as I understand, you can still love sex, but, you know, have it in a very healthy and good way.
Yes, of course you can. But if you want to define, it's not my place to say what anybody does or that anyone should stop. But if somebody came to me because their behavior was causing suffering,
yeah,
then I would say maybe there might be an addiction there.
Okay.
Because there are lots of people who have fantastic sex, very great, healthy sex. But if you're suffering,
yeah.
Or if you're hurting other people and therefore hurting yourself because of it, then I would say that there's an issue. And that's really with everything. Lots of people love food. I mean, I know people, you know, in my life I've grown up with people who've drunk very heavily, but I would never say that they had a problem with it. But then to somebody else, it's the thing that destroys them. And far less than the person who drinks every day, maybe. It's how you respond to it for yourself, personally. Let's tune in and let's start to do some posture. So I'm going to teach a class called The Body Rarefied by the Breath. So, Om Namo Gurudev Namo, three times. Inhale. And exhale. And inhale to begin. Om Namo Gurudev Namo. Om Namo Gurudev Namo. Start with the root lock, then the belly, and the neck. Keep the breath. And exhale. Take a moment, eyes closed. I'd like you just to notice how you feel now. And hopefully I'll remember to ask you to pay attention afterwards. I love that wave after the root lock, that kind of wave of energy that moves up the body. Okay, so I'll ask you to practice mostly with your eyes closed unless you need to see me demonstrate a posture. If you find a posture uncomfortable, I mean, I don't have a problem with uncomfortable. You can be uncomfortable, but if you actually can't do something, just ask me and I'll change the posture for you. And we'll start with what's called miracle bends. And they're called miracle bends because what they do, come standing up, is that they completely change your electromagnetic field. And they stimulate you into feeling much more positive. That's their job. So as a tool for the addictive personality and depression, just start by bending over your head, take your head down, legs straight, stretch the back, and then inhale up, and exhale forward. And as you get stronger, you stretch back. Keep moving, keep breathing. Powerful breath. Long, deep breaths. Thank you. Inhale to the center and exhale, twisting round to the left. Inhale to the center and exhale, twisting round to the right. And notice how you're stretching out the dorsal muscles either side of your either side of the spine, or regulates your immune system and the white blood cell count in your body. But what the thymus does when it comes to depression, there is absolutely nothing that is more powerful than this posture. And it's a very difficult posture to do because it engages all the muscles of the abdomen. So if you want to get strong, one of the things I'm hoping that they're going to let me do is actually teach a class on core body strength. Because I think if you want to get strong, this is page one. And it's page one for your physical body, but what it does to the hormonal flow in the body is indescribable. So when you get to the end of this posture, I'm going to ask you to sit back up so that you're kneeling and close your eyes, because it's very radical, the effect, when you actually know what to look for. It's extraordinary. And when you can feel what it's doing to you, you can see how powerful a tool it is. So if you wake up, or if you may be here because you're in the middle of a depression, the first thing I'd say is get out of bed, lie on the floor and do this. It changes your life completely. So, it's called front platform. So if you can't do a full front platform because of your back, and that's fine, or because you're only just beginning to build the core body strength, you go on the knees. So I'm on my knees, but my body is straight. So I'm like that. But if you can do full front platform, it looks like that. And I'm going to ask you to do a minute. So let me set my timer and let me find you some totally hooligan music. No? Don't you think that's terribly important? Oh, here we go. Okay, ready, steady, go. Okay, ready, steady, go. A minute. Chest, and that exquisite feeling of excitement is the thymus working. The thymus is one of the glands that drives all the other glands, and all your hormonal flow is driven by the seven glands in your body, but the thymus is the one to play with for depression. One more posture to warm up, but it comes back again. Actually, it's the beginning of the set. So we begin the set with what would also be the third warm-up, which is, again, a very exquisite posture for depression, because this posture releases a huge amount of dopamine into the body. Dopamine makes you feel good. Dopamine, unlike endorphins, the effect of endorphins and dopamine are both slightly different. I'll give you an endorphin rush later. It's very important that you have all these experiences. Dopamine is soft and very sweet. It's a very lovely feeling. So what you're going to do now is Sufi grind. And what Sufi grind does is it is about the first chakra. The first chakra is your history and where you come from. Now, let's not go into this argument about whether addiction is hereditary or whether it's nature versus nurture. Doesn't matter. It's not the point. But most of what we respond and react to, and most of what we suffer from, is how we've been trained through experience to think mainly about ourselves. Would you agree? Mm-hmm. It's the root of the suffering. Well, this posture is about getting rid of all the history. This posture is the job of this posture is to massage your intestines. And if you understand the map of the energy in the body, the root chakra, the first chakra, is your history. It's the tribal aspect of us. It's where you come from. It's all your shit, literally. It is. I mean, let's not mess about. And what this posture does is it massages your intestines. It cleans out. It grounds the crap. That's its job. At the same time, it massages the kidneys that hold fear, and it massages the liver, which is the seat of anger in the body. But the job of this posture, and you'll quite often find it at the beginning of a set, if the set is about transformation, the job of this posture is to help us let go. The end result of this posture, and why I will always ask you to practice with your eyes closed, and not to open your eyes at the end of a posture, because at the end of this posture, you'll have a dopamine experience. My intention as a teacher is to enable you to find a place with your practice where actually it becomes so exquisite that it's a union with your soul, it's a union with your higher self. That's my job as a teacher. You don't have to have that with me, you can take that anywhere, but if I give you anything, it's that it transforms how you practice. And when you sit at the end of this posture, my intention, my hope would be that actually beyond that you don't care. Actually to move after that would be, I don't care. I'm not interested, kind of just, I need to be still. Because actually when you really understand the nature of posture, eventually with your practice, I mean posture, we focus on posture to the point of insanity in the West. Posture is only to better enable you to meditate. Posture is only to get rid of the crap that you're carrying around so that you can meditate. It's not the end. It's not the end result. Ultimately the posture falls away and then the meditation is the divine sweetness. Yeah? So enjoy, get to the end of the posture and feel the sweetness. So this posture, the repetitiveness of this posture, stimulates dopamine, which is very lovely. And one of the things that we lack when we suffer from depression. So to get the most out of this posture, you hold your knees, slide to the right, and then as you inhale, you arc your chest forward and open your throat. And as you exhale, you slouch and open your shoulder blades. Inhale, arc your chest forward, open the throat. Exhale into a slouch. So just let yourself go. Long, deep breathing. Find a rhythm. Eyes closed, tongue pulled back. Press to the roof of the mouth. Attention on your third eye. inversely to open the shoulder blades. Let yourself get lost in the rhythm, in the releasing and the letting go. We're very attached to our history. Great. So, left side of the body is the female side, attached to the moon, the negative mind. The right side of the body is the male side, attached to the sun, it's the positive mind. Left hand down, right hand up. Left hand down, right hand up. In Gyan Mudra, very beautiful. You're not going to move. You're going to do long, slow, deep breathing. If you feel the need to move, you just lean forward. If you can't hold your arms up, you just lean forward, release the tension, come back up again. I need you to discover just how exquisite and powerful you are. It's the first finger, sweetheart. Yep. I need you to discover how powerful you are. Eyes closed, it's only 3 minutes. There's nothing wrong with a little pain, darling.
Did you say the left side was positive?
Left side is negative.
Left side is negative for female, and the right side is positive. For male.
Yes, and it doesn't mean that the left side's bad. It doesn't mean the left side's bad. You need discernment.
Right.
Look at the third eye. Pull your tongue back. Press it to the roof of the mouth. Slow the breath down. Use the mantra, I can and I am. I can and I am. thighs when you're having fun. Correct your posture. Keep your eyes closed. We're heading for an endorphin rush. Which is why I don't want you to put your arms down. Squeeze the root lock, tighten the belly, pull the neck lock. Keeping the eyes closed, exhale and release your hands into your lap. Very exquisite. That's an endorphin rush. Waves of pleasure. And as you get more experienced at endorphin rushes, they're a portal through to the etheric realms. You can travel on endorphin rushes into the most exquisite places. And you can go to such beautiful places that when you see paintings by people like Jonathan Martin, you know exactly where they've been. And exhale. Okay, how are you all doing? Have you got any questions? Yes?
I don't feel like I'm doing a lot of things at all.
You don't?
No.
Okay. Have you given birth?
No.
You haven't. When you squeeze your anus and pull your pussy, can you feel that?
Talk to my boyfriend.
Are you not allowed to say that?
Yes, of course.
Okay,
yes,
just to give a surprise.
Yeah. I'm surprised to hear that.
What?
I'm not surprised to hear you say anything like that at all.
But some people, if you've given birth vaginally, it can be quite difficult to get in touch with that part of the body. So, okay, can you feel your vagina?
Excellent.
Okay, so what you're going to do is squeeze your anus, pull your pussy, pull your stomach. And that's the root lock.
Yeah.
And you may find that you lose the pull and you have to just keep pulling it. Okay. And then that becomes Kegel exercises. And as you do it more, you'll be able to hold it for more.
And when I do this, I just feel like I'm getting indigestion. There's no nice...
Well, that's okay. It'll come with time. What's this? Describe to me what this is.
When I try and do the other two as well.
I think your focus needs to...
the first one.
Okay. Do you want to feel what my stomach feels like when I pull it? If I sit in front of you, I can come to you. Okay. So.
I mean, if I can do it, like physically, I can do it all, but.
Yeah? We want to concentrate on what's happening behind, really. It takes time to get in touch with how it feels.
Because there's nothing except the physical things.
Okay, but it does take time to get in touch with how it feels. When you pull the neck lock, you want to slightly take the neck back so that you get this sense of the ligaments coming. I mean, admittedly, I've been doing it for a long time, and it can be said to be very subtle, but once you get into the subtlety, it's quite intense. So just
right.
Keep playing with it, yeah. Is it your first experience?
Yeah, it's my first.
Okay, well, I think you're rushing. You had a question. Sorry.
No, I've got it now. if you say that you can get like dopamine rush and endorphin rush and serotonin rush, blah blah blah, through Kundalini, could, a bit of a critical question, could Kundalini develop into an addiction?
I don't think it does, because I think it's very, I mean, I've had people say, oh, you're addicted to yoga. I don't think so, because, I mean, that what's very interesting is then you meet your human nature, because the actual reality is, I can say to you, okay, this is the tool, and now, okay, this is the tool, so you go away, you write it down, and then you think, okay, I'm feeling like shit, what am I going to do? Am I actually going to sit here and do breath of fire, or am I going to have a cake? I'm going to have a cake. I don't think you're addicted. You know what I mean? It's a question of, if you're suffering, it's where you go. It's where you choose to go will then define what you're doing, whether that gives you something positive and healthy. I would consider yoga, in whatever form it chooses to take for you, to be something that you do for life and health. It's about you bringing yourself back into a state of balance. So I've been in recovery for over 20 years, and I've been doing yoga since 96. And 20 years into recovery, I can still choose to act out, not necessarily, I mean, I don't take drugs or smoke or drink or do anything, I'm very boring, but if it comes to my mind and my moods, it's quite unusual that I will really stop. There are moments when of course I do, but it isn't the first thing I do. I tend to sort of look at the different tools I have in front of me and then weigh it up and think, do I really want to get angry? Actually, I really want to get angry. You know, and I will quite often choose that route rather than going, I'll just drop and do 20 sit-ups. So I don't, you know, as an addict, I lack moderation totally and utterly. I don't find myself insanely yogic. Does that answer your question? I think it's easy to justify not doing it by saying that. But I have learned, and it's a whole other subject, and it's a class I'll teach, but as somebody with the addictive personality, what you may find, if you're happy to take that nomenclature, is that you have a very vast array of ups and downs based on not only your thought process, but your hormonal responses to those thought processes. Because that's the drama, is we think something and then our body reacts. And then that becomes our reality. It's a series of steps, probably going that way, yeah? We think a thought. That thought produces a feeling based on a hormonal flow, which is normally negative because we've trashed our hormones. Therefore, we normally will shoot cortisol, which is a hormone that makes you feel like, I mean, just makes you feel horrible, it makes you feel stressed. And what you learn to do with yoga is to start to soften the highs and the lows until you become a lot more manageable. And then one of the things, we had a long conversation, I only point to Caroline because she was here, but we had a long conversation about sugar. You know, coming off sugar, managing sugar, because sugar is actually one of the, sugar in all its different forms through the food and everything, is one of the things that will throw your moods more than anything. So, coming back to is it addictive, I don't think it is. It depends on how you do it. I mean, if you were doing it 24/7 as much as you do whatever else you do, then probably yes. And if you're suffering and you can't eat and la la la, yes. But in the main, you use it to help yourself. Therefore, no. Yeah? But what you're given with it, what you get when you understand what you're doing, is a series of tools which you can then choose to use. And the whole thing about recovery is that moment where you take responsibility to change. So you choose. You have a moment where you can say, I could do something really shitty. I'm pointing to the left because it's the negative side. Or I could actually, that one thing, I could do that thing. And actually, I've forgotten now that I wanted to do that thing, smoke a cigarette or whatever it is. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Can you please tell us a little bit more about this posture or this? I think they're...
Well, yeah, you hold your history in your shoulders. It's one of the places, and actually it's interesting as women, to be all women, because the other place that you hold your history is your prostate, which is a gland in your vagina. But you hold a lot of your history in your shoulders, which is why we have so much language about the shoulders. And Yogi Bhajan taught a lot about that. He didn't really specify it very clearly in words, but it's a way to start to discover how powerful you are. How did it feel doing that? You hit the pain you were dreading, I guess. How was it?
Well, it was. I don't know why I dread that pain so much. I think it's because I'm not in control. You are. So I'm a quitter. I know I'm a quitter.
Yeah, but you choose to be here.
Yeah, I chose to be here. Yeah, because she somehow. I know.
I know. I don't know. Something I'd
yeah, but you did it. That but that's what's extraordinary is you did it.
Yeah, I'd still dread it. And I don't know.
Yeah,
why.
But we're going to do another one in a minute.
I was trying to dread it.
But you can start to we set fences in our minds. We fence ourselves in. We have thought processes based on our experience of ourselves and what other people have said about us and to us that we diminish and delineate what we're capable of by these thought processes. That's what we do. So we go into neat little boxes and we stay there. We don't upset people. We stay within the family traditions. Our mother was always hopeless. We're always hopeless. Our mother was a victim. We're a victim. Our dad was always bankrupt. We're bankrupt. Whatever we do. And then we look for partners who continue that pattern. That's what we do. So what you do when you take on things like those arm meditations, and particularly if you see it all the way through, is you kind of go, hang on a minute. I'm more powerful than I thought. I went into this. It depends on how it's taught, but I went into this thinking I couldn't do it, and I've done it. I'm actually stronger than I thought I was. Mm-hmm. I'm more than I allowed myself to be.
Yes.
So it's an empowering experience. It's painful, there's no question, but the interesting thing is, did you have any pain after the one we did on Sunday?
No.
We did a horrible one on Sunday for 9 minutes, and it was very, very painful, but there's no residual pain afterwards. But what you do is you just, the fences expand. And then each time you do it, you get a little bit different perception of yourself and you start to recognise how powerful you are. Mm. So then you change. That changes you. Mm. So that's the purpose of them. Let's keep going. We're going to go into camel pose now. Now, eating, if anybody here is dealing with food, this is a very interesting posture for food. And particularly also sex. There you are. We come back to food and sex. Sorry. So you know, I'm actually training to be a sex therapist, so I'm going to... Because I'm quite comfortable talking about it.
Holy, sex, food, drugs, alcohol, and what is the fifth one?
Gambling.
Yeah.
Gambling is really dangerous. Mm. You know, you can lose everything in a night. It's very much a dangerous...
My neighbours did that when I was a kid,
and
everything.
Yeah. Camel pose. So what camel pose does... is it very much massages the kidneys, very good for fear, but where it touches the food and sex is if you have had an eating disorder or you're dealing with eating disorders, you may find it quite tough here. It pulls a lot in the ligaments, but that also affects you if you've had sexual abuse. So it's a really interesting posture. Now, please don't think I need you to talk about anything in public. I don't. I'll give you two options for this posture. You may just be extraordinarily stiff. How this posture ideally looks is that you sit on your heels outside. My heels are outside my bum. Inhale and push up. So that's camel pose. Come out of it by dropping back. And then reverse the posture into curling up. That's camel pose, okay? But if that's too much for you, then you can be on your knees with your hands behind your bum. Until you stretch open enough to one day be able to do camel pose. I'm fine with ambition. I mean, I don't think you need to be perfect at posture. Ambition is fine. So if you come back into what's called celibate pose, where your heels are outside of your bum, I'd have your feet entirely on a mat. The top of my feet is half on and half off a mat, which is very uncomfortable. So your heels are outside of your bum. You hold your heels, and you lift up and push forward. We're going to aim for 2 minutes with breath of fire. So eyes closed.
How do you hold your heels?
Like that. Hold your heels and push your bum forward. Push your pelvis forward. That's it.
Ah.
Yes. Okay, eyes closed, tongue pulled back, press through for the mouth. Did you break something, Helena?
No, I'm fine.
If you're standing and doing the posture, then put your hands on the back of your thighs. The rest of you are fine. Let your head drop back. ago. Curl up in baby pose. Keep your eyes closed. To depression, not that I want to negate your addiction to sex, we can talk about that later, but if we come back to depression, I think that a way of looking at depression is, I mean, not only is it unexpressed anger, but it's an abandonment of the self. It's finally sort of coming back, but it's such a distance between the abandonment of the self and the point at which you come back that there seems to be an enormous gap. Does that make sense as a way of looking at it? And it's very hard to reconnect. We're so encouraged to be disconnected from ourselves that it's very, very hard to find the way back to a whole sense of self. And I firmly subscribe to the power of the root lock, the power of coming into the sensation of this thing, because the moment that you start to fully engage the pelvis, you start to create boundaries. But what you also do is you give yourself a place from which to root, because one of the things about depression, it can be said to be a lack of connection to the soul. Although the soul is glaringly there and screaming in pain, how do you get back into it? It's very frightening. And this next posture is a challenging posture. And I use this word advisedly, because obviously I can set up you having a difficult time with the posture. I could say it's so easy. But actually, I want you to be challenged by this posture, because it's a powerful posture. And to understand the power of it will hopefully help you to take it on. You're going to work two muscles in your body called the psoas muscles, which come from the inside of the spine, behind the spine. So they're inside the body. And they come down through the pelvis and out to the front of the legs. And they're muscles that are very involved in holding the pelvis together. So if the pelvis is the seat of our history, and if the pelvis is the root of all our self-esteem and our boundaries and our sense of who we are and grounds the soul in the body, this is a very powerful muscle group. It's two muscles, they're long muscles. And sadly, it's always men who seem to be much stronger with this than women. It's an easier posture for men than women. And how it looks is like that. You're going to do it with breath fire. Deceptively simple. No, you're not going to do it with breath fire, you're going to do it with long, deep breathing. And you're going to shake.
Yes.
And the shaking is fine. And we're going to aim for 2 minutes. If you do really well on 2 minutes, no pressure, then we'll aim for 2.5.
I've got a lower back problem, and this thing I can't do. Is there something else I can do?
Okay, yes. Can you do one leg at a time?
Yeah.
Okay, so just do one leg at a time. And I think maybe you might find one leg at a time easier for you as well. But the rest of you, I need you to suffer madly. and frankly, just do what you can. Do it as best as you can. The shaking's fine. Okay, ready, steady, go. Slow the breath down.
Keep your eyes open.
Close your eyes. Yes, ideally, yes. Your hands are on the floor. Legs straight. A tip, a trick, is to make yourself as long as possible. Big smile. Close your eyes. Shaking's okay. Shaking is your nervous system coming back into play. Remember the mantra, I can and I am. Instead of I can't. Forget I can't, I can and I am. Okay, that's a minute. Long deep breathing, Angel. Breath of fire would distract you from your suffering too much. Okay, you've got 20 minutes. Come on, you can do it for 20 minutes. Yes, yes, yes.
20 minutes?
No, 20 seconds, I'm sorry. And now look at all that giggling, it's 10 seconds. Come on. See, I put this music on specially to help you. Inhale, stay up, hold the breath, squeeze the root lock, tight, tight, tight. And exhale and lie flat with extraordinary grace.
That music is incredibly sexy, Carolyn. That music is very sexy.
Yeah. Well, it could be that you like your practice a lot. You can interpret it. How, is it alright that it's very
sexy?
And it distracts you from your suffering. And it was in to encourage you into getting on with it. I thought it was quite appropriate to your yoga practice, actually. It's Moby.
It's what?
It's a man called Moby. M-O-B-Y. It's an interestingly challenging posture, isn't it? And it's Moby from Destroyed. No, Moby from Hotel. Inhale. And exhale. Okay, come sitting up. If you've got a mat or a pillow, you might want to sit on it if you have issues with keeping your spine straight for the next posture. Legs straight apart, so you might want to turn yourself sideways if you're too close to somebody. Arms up, palms facing forward. Breath of fire. Eyes closed, tongue pulled back. Straight, straight, straight. Your arms are straight. It's not a soft posture. If you're on straight, it's an ear sandwich. Straight up. Chest, dynamic prayer pose, so your wrists are at a right angle. Look at me. Wrists are at a right angle, breath of fire.
Thank you.
breath, press the hands together. Squeeze the root lock, tight, 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 pull the belly, pull the neck lock. You've just been working with the neutral mind. Exhale. And now release your hands onto your knees, but notice belonging. The neutral mind is a really interesting place. It's where we allow and accept, and now you. There may be within you the sensation, the desire. Put your hands back together again and feel how satisfying that is. Or even just cup them in your lap. A neutral mind is a place where we allow. Interesting thing about depression, it's about a complete resistance to our reality. If we don't judge it, if we can stop judging ourselves, then the suffering is diminished. I like Breath of Fire and Prayer Pose because it's a kind of oxymoron. On one hand, you're doing something exquisitely dynamic with the Breath of Fire, and on the other hand, with the posture, the mudra that the hands are in, you're taking yourself into a place where you don't judge. And I quite like the two opposites of that. How are you doing, ladies?
Wonderful.
You're wonderful. That's fantastic. Okay, we'll get to the last posture. And the last posture comes back to the core muscles of the body. We're going to do a minute on each side, and it looks like this. Okay. Shall I wait for you?
If you want, yeah. I'm just trying to avoid it.
I'm teasing you, and it was horrid of me. I'm sorry. Okay, so this is core muscles. So basically, what I tend to do is cross one foot. I find it impossible to do with my feet together. So I don't cross my feet. I just sort of do that. One foot comes down over the other. And then lift up. You're going to do a minute on each side. Strength very quickly, and the trick is not to go into kind of shame or low self-esteem about them, but just use the practice to build the strength. It will come really fast. You'll be amazed how fast it will come. So if you find something difficult, if you need to take a break, do so, but come back to it. Don't go into a kind of I can't do it. Just do what you can, and like you have been, if a posture is not right, ask me how to change it, because I can always find you an alternative. So turn on the other side and do another minute.
Is it about physical strength, or is it a
get
pressure?
Get
on
with it.
I'm really curious.
I can't see for a minute. It's about your nervous system and the core muscles of your body. Do it and I'll talk to you. Inhale, squeeze the root lock, and exhale. Just for a moment, humour me and lie on your stomachs. Well, some people are doing it with their arms straight, and that's fine. So what you're trying to do is build your nervous system and your core body strength. But it's your nervous system that will allow you to breathe without juddering and to hold postures for a long time. It's not, that isn't so much about the muscular strength. That's actually about how stable you, and your nervous system is linked to how stable you are mentally. So
yeah.
It's a loop of different things that combine, and as you change one, you adjust the other, and as you adjust the other, you change the other. It kind of goes around in a circle like that. Very good thing for women to lie on their stomach because it grounds the subconscious and it puts pressure on the womb, so it which is the centre of the being of the female. So it grounds you, even if you're on the second floor. Now, I'm going to take you into a relaxation now, not verbally, I'm just going to let the music do it, and I'll come around and cover you up. But if you want to turn over for your relaxation, then do so. breathe more deeply. Move your tongue in your mouth. Move your fingers, move your toes. Rotate your hands. Rotate your feet. Rub your hands together. And rub your feet together. And then a huge stretch. Stretch widthways. So if you're lying on your stomach, just open your legs, open your arms, just get the stretch. Or else turn onto your back. Bring your knees to your chest. Inhale. Spread your arms in a T shape. And exhale your knees to your right, your head to the left. Inhale back up and do the same to the other side. Bring your knees back, give them a hug. And then come sitting up. Now, time has flown away with us, and I'm sorry, I have to stop, but I owe you a meditation. I'm really sorry. I thought it was better to get you to relax rather than stop it and say, right, quickly sit up and do something for 3 minutes. So I owe you a meditation. I'm sorry. But we've done a lot. How do you feel? Are you all okay?
Yes.
Excellent. And hopefully that's given you some tools and the experience of what they do to your physical body. My plan with this class is to have a different topic each week. And so that was depression. And then I have also guilt, history, anger, meditation, ceremony, hormones, what is spirituality, prayer and ceremony, boundaries, self-esteem, acceptance, responsibility, the 5 core addictions, intimacy and sexuality sober. Those are some of the topics that I plan to cover. So hopefully I'll see you again. But always feel free to ask questions, because I think it's important to get, you know, particularly if you're trying to do something like 12-step recovery and make it make sense with yoga, sometimes that can be quite challenging as well. So I'm happy to answer any questions that come up. We need to close. We worked in a sacred space, so we chant sat now to close the space. So cross your legs again. May the long time sun shine upon you, all love surround you, and the pure light within guide your way on. Inhale. Should there be something that you want me to teach on in terms of the addictive personality, do ask. And if I don't know about it, I will research it.